from a closed session, and I will ask our city attorney if there's anything to report.
There's no reportable action.
Thank you. We will open our regular session with a call to order, and we'll begin with a Pledge of Allegiance by Councilmember Sturdivant. Thank you. Roman Fonzi, seconded by Councilmember Clay. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. First on our agenda are some presentations. And though Bob has deferred to me, Bob Kelly, Councilman Kelly, is a member of this committee, and I'd like you to go ahead and do the introduction and tell us about this a little bit.
This is the path to a home. It's the 10-year plan down at the county to try to reduce or eliminate homelessness, and I represent the city on that board down there. And tonight Patricia Gomez is here from the organization to give us a presentation.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley and council members. My name is Patricia Gomez, and I am the director for the Homeless Services Oversight Council. And I'm pleased to meet you. And I just wanted to give you a little background on the 10-year plan and start off first, though, with just a little picture of homelessness in our county and in your area. And so we're going to look a little bit about the faces of homelessness. And this is taken from the 2009 County Enumeration Report. Just last month, we've had the biannual one. We don't have the data yet, so this is a little bit old data. At that time, there were 3,839 homeless individuals. One-third of them were homeless children. And we felt pretty confident about that number because the schools were acting, were very aggressive. Paso Robles had 20% of the county's homelessness with 428 adults. And this count is taken biannually on the last week of January for one day. And so all the providers provide us information, and we actually send people out to where homeless people are known to reside and do a count between 6 in the morning and approximately 1 in the afternoon. And this was in 2009, and we should have our data for this year in a couple months. In total, 36% of the people in the county were in the North County, and a third of those people had children with them at that time. Just some other information about the people in North County at that time. 75% lived in the county more between 1 and 5 years. If you look at the little pie chart, the dark purple, maroon, was people here for approximately more than 1 year, and the large blue section was actually people who had been here more than 5 years. And so they're not a transient population. These are our neighbors. Additionally, they had strong community ties. Over half were originally from the county, and a quarter of them had friends or family who lived in the county. And I think that that's a real important thing for us to remember as we try and work towards ending homelessness for people who are us. There are coworkers. Half of them were employed or were actively looking for employment. Interestingly, trends, about a quarter of them had used the One Stop or Job Club in order to look for jobs. And 12% of the homeless in the North County were veterans. So, what is a path to a home? Path to a home is the county-wide 10-year plan to end homelessness. It was developed in 2002 through community conversations with providers, business representatives, everyone from all of the city councils had a representative. And it really is part of a nationwide movement. It wasn't something dreamt up by somebody in the county or somebody at the federal level, but was a nationwide movement by county, by providers of homeless services. And what 10-year plans are basically a strategic business plan. I mean, it's the same type of model that you use to plan for your city or to plan for your business. And so what it is to guide our communities, to guide our county, to improve and make more effective our programs, and really to begin to integrate best practices into what we do. We were rather late to the table. Some jurisdictions have had their 10-year plans in place for 9 years. And so we can really build on the data that they have used and produced for us to begin to understand what are those best practices. And the whole premise of the 10-year plans and of our 10-year plan is to begin to move from managing homelessness to really ending homelessness, to begin to get us all focused on housing and housing people who are homeless, an effective issue for jurisdictions and for agencies. And this is our vision, and our vision is a laudable vision. We envision a future in which housing and comprehensive services necessary to remain housed are available for all, affording everyone their maximum self-sufficiency and the opportunity to be productive and participating members of society. And I think the key to remember on this is that it's more than just housing, but really to begin to look at the individual and understand why they had housing barriers, and then to provide the services that are necessary to maintain them in housing. And that might be a little bit of services for a few months, or it might be services that extend for a few years. But it really is to begin to look at the individuals. And then we're going to look at just, well, what are the strategies? How will we do this? And this, because it's a part of a nationwide movement, because we have a number of 10-year plans to build on, these strategies are not real different. The action steps within these strategies are tailored for the locality. But the general overall strategies in 10-year plans are pretty common. One is obviously access to housing, creating more housing opportunities. It doesn't necessarily mean to build more housing or more apartments and such, but rather look at other creative ways to find rooms, to find apartments, to find shared opportunities, shared housing opportunities for our homeless who have housing barriers as soon as possible, and to begin to work with them to find appropriate housing, and then what is needed to maintain the housing. Coordinated client-centered services is our third strategy, and that really is basically looking at all of the housing homeless service providers and to begin to start thinking of ourselves as a business. We're all in the business of ending homelessness. And to begin to think of what we do as various divisions in our business. And it's not just the nonprofits, but it's what you do as you consider allocating funds to them, or as you consider housing development requests and to what extent you can make decisions in that to provide for those the housing opportunities. It's working with also the hospitals and the jails and how they work with their homeless, so that we look at ourselves as a whole system and do that in a coordinated fashion. And finally, the implementation and the accountability, and that is where the Homeless Services Oversight Council fits in. We are a broadly representative body with representatives from each of the city council. We're very lucky to have Councilman Kelly on the council because he brings that perspective of the real estate redevelopment agencies and can help us on the first aspect of access to housing. We have faith-based representatives from the agencies, representatives from the private sector, again, so that we can have that coordinated system-wide approach. And what we do and what we will constantly refer back to are to those best practices that are contained in our 10-year plan. And as we plan our programs or make decisions, ask ourselves whether we're moving in the direction that the plan outlines. And so one of the questions is, how are we doing? The plan has been in place since 2009 for about a year. The HSOC has been meeting. The agencies have been very responsive in starting that coordinated conversations. And so I'm just going to spend a little time in showing you how we're doing. And the access to housing. In the last year, 140 people transitioned into permanent housing. And those are people that were in the programs that we have the data for. This might be an underreport. If people were not being case managed, say, for example, by Kepslow, we might not have captured that. But we do know that in the last year, through some of our programs, 140 people transitioned into permanent housing. Another 25 were through what's called the HUD-VASH program, and that's Veterans Assistance and Supportive Housing Program that is sponsored by HUD and the Federal Veterans Affairs Office. The federal plan to end, 10-year plan to end homelessness has targeted veterans in particular. There's a commitment to end veterans homelessness in 5 years. And so what we are seeing are more programs that are veteran-focused. And this one, we were very successful in getting the vouchers. They're Section 8 vouchers. And then the VA provides a social worker to work with each one of those veterans that have been placed in more. So we've been really quite pleased with being able to house our homeless vets. The county last year, actually in December, reallocated some funds specifically for an extremely low-income housing project, as yet unidentified. These were funds that had been allocated for housing projects, but either the project came in under budget or had not been the funds had not been totally used. And so the county bundled it and reallocated some funds for extremely low-income. The North County is the area that is preferable for that project because we know, based on the numbers, that this is where the need is. With your homeless population, we expect to do a letter of interest within the next month or so. We're working with the housing committee that Councilman Kelly sits on of the HSOC. And have also been talking with the housing trust funds to perhaps leverage some of their funds to get a project, again, hopefully in the North County. And then we're just starting to do some more understanding of our need, gathering data. What is the inventory of housing that we have? What do the housing elements of the various cities look like? So that we can begin to match the needs of the individuals, the needs of the families, and then the type of housing that we have or the gaps in housing and where we need to target some development or reaching out to the private sector for use. Prevention. We had a homeless prevention and rapid rehousing program through some stimulus funds. Through that, 119 received housing assistance. And again, that was to prevent them from being evicted so they would not become homeless. And then finally, there's another program for supportive housing rental assistance. And these are for individuals who are physically disabled or have a mental illness who really need some supportive case management to maintain their housing. Through that, there were another 8 individuals who were maintained in housing received rental assistance. So in total, there were 180 people, or households, excuse me, for whom we either maintained their housing or got them into housing rapidly. How are we doing on the coordinated client-centered services strategy? Your North County providers formed a collaborative. These are all the providers for homeless services and have done some remarkable work on just getting to know what they do and doing some case conferencing so that when they're both seeing the same client, they're doing it in a coordinated fashion. We've used that as a forum to do some training on the national policy directions. We have some new legislation coming in place, and it's going to affect how we get our funding from HUD. The collaborative has been very supportive, and the agencies there. in trying to gain an understanding so that we can build the programs that will make us competitive. We're implementing a homeless management information system, HMIS, so that we can begin to build the data that we need to show that that we are performing as a system in ending homelessness. The county acts as the administrator of that. Your agencies up in the North County, ECHO, Transition Food and Shelter, and being very...
Do you need to...
I can close with a story.
A story would be great.
I will close with a story. These are just some more things that we've done. And this is a story of George. That's not really his name. But I'll just... George, it does, though, and that's not really his picture, lived in here in San Luis Obispo, Asida Creek, for a number of years, and he was known to the park rangers and to the service providers. He pretty much stayed in his tent. He ate food that people brought to him. He slept there, drank his beer, and indeed relieved himself in his tent or nearby. It was scattered with garbage and debris, and that frequently floated down the creek in the wintertime. He couldn't walk because his leg is atrophied, and he had been coaxed to the shelter in the past. They had gotten him a wheelchair. He'd lost it and went back to the creek. Last November, the rangers approached Capslow and said that we really needed to move him. And so through a collaborative effort, again, with the park rangers, with Sierra Vista, with Capslow, they were able to get a crane, get him out of that area, get him to the hospital where they did a primary examination, cleaned him up. Capslow, through use of some funds, found him a housing, did some intensive case management, were there daily, got him food, got him his beer if he wanted his beer, but kept him in the housing. That was 4 months ago. His case manager still drops in with him every day. He drinks half as much. He engages with his case manager, thinks about the future. He's gained weight. He keeps himself clean and tidy.
And going on in the county with the homeless, it's not the people that we normally see standing alongside the freeway. And I think if there's any of you in town that really want to get a close-hand look of what the homeless situation is right here in town, I think we have one of the best organizations going to treat the homeless. That's the ECHO organization.
Absolutely.
And they're always looking for volunteers or donations, and it's a very worthy cause. I think at the last meeting we had, I think we're down to, what, $5.14 a night to house somebody and feed them, which is remarkable. And if you just go over there, it's a good bring a tear to your eye to see some of the situations that are over there. But thank you very much for coming tonight and putting the presentation on.
Thank you. Councilmember Clay.
Yes, and I certainly agree with Bob in regards to ECHO. It's a wonderful organization. We're fortunate to have them. Other than San Luis Obispo and Atascadero, do any of the other cities have homeless overnight shelters?
There is no other overnight shelters. There is a group in the South County Five Cities Coalition who are making an effort to do a multi-service center and then their plan is to work with the faith-based communities to do the sheltering.
I see. I think it's unfortunate. It seems like, other cities, let George do it or something like that. I mean, they rely on San Luis, or in the North County they rely on Atascadero, which is unfortunate. The other thing is a lot of homeless have dogs, and is there any, if they build one, could they include a kennel? Because I know of a person that wife passed away, and he lost his home, and he has a dog, and he will not go to the shelter because the dog is more important to him.
That has been part of the conversation in the San Luis Obispo shelter
discussion. And one other thing, what percentage, and I appreciate that, that they're thinking about their companion, the dogs.
Yeah.
What percentage live in the cars that are actually homeless?
We don't know that. That's a good mm-hmm. question. And one of the slides I skipped over was the convening the safe parking discussion group, mm-hmm. Because there are a number of people sleeping in the car that has increased. And what we're trying to do, what we're looking into, is a program where there will be a safe place mm-hmm. to do so. I'm going to put a plug. We are having an informational meeting that we've invited all of the city's managers, community development directors, and police chiefs to begin to introduce that concept and to get some feedback as to whether that would work to have designated parking areas, because we are seeing more
sleeping in the homes. So it would be safer.
Exactly. Yeah.
And just a comment, it would be nice if the other cities stepped up and did their part.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
We all echo the commendation to our own organization, ECHO, that does
absolutely.
Such a good
They're
job.
A great partner.
Yeah.
And I did leave you with some handouts about the.
Thank
did you.
You
get them? Great. Thank you.
We'll move on to our next presentation, an update on historic City Hall interior finishes. Ms. Kingsnorth, welcome again.
Thank you very much. There's a PowerPoint presentation coming up shortly. We've been able to see what we are planning for the inside of the building aside from the repair, so we thought we would give you a brief overview of exactly what you'll see when you walk back into a completed historic City Hall. So with that, the process we work through on developing interiors for all of these buildings is we really do look to the local community for inspiration. So it's not that we develop color palette or anything completely out of a void. We look around and say, what's out there? What should be influencing these interiors? So in this instance, what you see up on the screen at the moment is representative of the city of Atascadero. And we did that on purpose. We even asked some of the city staff to provide photographs to us. What do you think Atascadero is? And this is the basis for the color palette that we have developed for the building. What you see in front of you are the base building finishes, and the images on the top really show where we've pulled these ideas from. In addition, there are boards behind me that have the actual finishes on them, so when you're all done and you want to go up and touch and feel and get a better sense instead of a potentially bad image on a PowerPoint, they're in the rear of the room for you to enjoy as well. So everything is fairly streamlined and simple, but taking into account the surroundings in Atascadero. The primary thing is really to note, so on this image here, we are starting with that slightly baseline concept of the Golden Hills, as it is many times, instead of going with an all-green building, because it is beautiful and it is lush here, but that really is what we consider to be Central Coast. Many people, the Golden Hills of California, all the rest of it. Taking these images as the baseline is what has helped us develop this carpet, which is the primary carpet throughout the entire building. There are specialized carpets that you'll see in just a moment for the lower rotunda space and the upper rotunda, but green. All of these to bring a little more life into the building rather than what everyone had experienced prior to the earthquake with the colors from the movie set of My Blue Heaven. The pink and the blue are a little outdated. We figured we should bring it into current standing rather than a movie set. Now, the lower rotunda is an area that we've really been focusing on. A lot of times the question comes up of what was it historically? It was all white. So we really don't have any basis to go off of there, and what we've been looking to do is enhance the room with something that is historically appropriate. So once again, taking the baseline color scheme that we've developed and kicking it up a notch, so to speak. That room is going to be the primary public room in the facility. So we're looking at upgrading the carpet. This is actually a patterned carpet. It has the circle in it, which is reminiscent of the actual circular space, which is the rotunda. And then we're looking at really bringing up the warmth factor in the room. Some natural wood. This is actually a man-made material that will be the counter for the reception desk. And then highlighting some of the original plaster work with accent colors. So taking what's in there, and this is simply a photograph of existing condition. It's all slightly ochre column, and then some decorative painting had been done over the years. Taking that concept and really enhancing it. So looking at the column no longer just as one continuous color, but really trying to enhance the architectural features of that. There are a lot of ins and outs on those columns, and we're looking to simply bring that forth. Most people don't know that. And simply by alternating paint colors, you can have people read deep versus shallow. And it's simply a paint trick. So it's a very inexpensive way to enhance the architecture of the room. In addition, we're looking at for the lower rotunda, simply paint. Where we're getting ambitious, and this is considered an ad alternate, this is not a base bid for the building, is also doing an enhanced paint scheme on the rotunda itself, on the ornate plaster work that's on the ceiling. Once again, right now it's all white, and we've got a few photographs to show that there really is a lot of relief on that dome, a lot of ins and outs. And by looking at this type of paint scheme and simply enhancing what we paint in that area, it will really make that dome pop. And that's what we're looking for. This will be the main public space, as we discussed. We want people to walk in there and really be inspired instead of having them just kind of walk in and not even know to look up. We're really looking to draw the eye up and have someone be, well, in some ways awestruck. And once again, it's just paint. So we're not adding marble. We're not adding anything that's extraordinarily expensive. The space is already going to be scaffolded. It's the way to go. And like I said, this is an additive alternate. The base bid is repaint it white. Now, we are repurposing the lower rotunda, and this is simply showing you what it's going to be. This is now going to be the main reception and welcome center for the building. So it used to be all museum space. Now we're talking about moving in through the primary door from the Sunken Gardens direction, coming up to this reception desk. And then we have two additional service points, one for the Historical Society, one for the permit counter, and having these be manned stations within the rotunda. We have waiting area here, and all of these are workstations. So we're actually now inserting people on a day-to-day basis within that space and having that warm wood colors that you can see on the boards behind me. And it's actually been developed to a level of detail where we're pulling inspiration from the building itself. This detail here should look familiar if you're familiar with looking up at the building. It's actually one of the details that is in the existing masonry of the building. So we're simply bringing that inside, once again trying to enhance people's understanding of, oh, that's something that's on the outside, it's now internal, once again bringing the warmth and the color. This image here is simply an example of somewhere else where we've done this. The desk is made of wood, and what we're looking to do is have different layers and different colors of wood, so it really makes it pop, and it's not just a flat surface for someone to come in and, well, just deal with a flat surface of wood. It gives depth. It also allows us to play with it a little bit, add some lighting, and basically make the front of this really glow. In addition, the room is dark right now, and we have numerous options for bringing up the light level in there. The original chandelier right now is the only light source for the space. That will stay, but we are looking at augmenting the lighting with this type of desktop fixture. So it's slightly reminiscent of the historic bank buildings, things like that, where you walk up to a teller. These will be dispersed throughout this counter, far enough away so you can still unroll a plan check set or whatever you actually need to do there. But once again, keeping with the historic intent of the space and not introducing a very modern fixture or something like that, just getting the light levels on the work surface to be appropriate for doing business on a day-to-day basis. Now, this is the entry vestibule from the Sunken Garden. And once again, this is one of those rooms where most people don't realize that there's decorative plaster happening in that room. What we are looking to do around, once again, there's slight elements of decorative painting simply to make the plaster pop and some enhanced light fixtures in the space to bring up the light levels. And just to point out, these are the original casework elements that are in there and are going to be going back into the facility for utilization by the Historical Society for display. Once we get up to the upper rotunda, as I showed you for the lower rotunda, that's really a golden floor, and it's really reminiscent of the rolling hills around here and the gold concept that everyone has for the Central Coast. Once you get up to the upper rotunda space, you're basically moving up that California oak tree, so to speak. So now we're in the branches, and I realize this gets a little metaphorical, and you could go, you're crazy, whatever. But this is really how we start developing it. It's more light-filled. That room actually has windows, whereas the lower rotunda doesn't. We wanted to bring forth that idea of, yes, you're up higher, there's more greenery, there's more life and volume related to this space, and actually potentially more activity because of council meetings and whatnot. So up here we've moved to a slightly greener palette, and I mean literally the color green, not sustainable. All of the finishes are sustainable that we have chosen. So there is a pattern to the carpet. It is somewhat leafy, similar to this image that you see here. And then we're looking at, once again, doing some enhanced painting. The image that you see here, we did hand rendering on top of, on the boards behind me, and you can start seeing how some of that color is going to play. It is not going to be nearly as ornate as the lower rotunda. The lower rotunda is always meant to be the focal point of the building, but this room is very important and needs that added level as well. The other thing that we're doing is replacing this existing wood mezzanine railing and going back to the actual historic without carpet, so that if something gets dirty or whatnot, you have to replace the whole thing. This is a tile situation, so if coffee spills or whatnot, you simply replace the tile, and you will have a backstock of tile that's provided by the contractor.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, this is simply a first floor finish plan related to the carpet. So once again, moving into the entry vestibule, which you saw an image of, we are providing a different carpet on both sides, and we consider this to be a walk-off mat. It's dusty in a Tuscadero. It's potentially muddy. We don't want that being tracked all the way into the building, so it is a specialized carpet that is meant to get the dust off of shoes or the dirt off of shoes. So we move from that zone then into the specific carpet related to the rotunda, the lower rotunda, and the corridor, the circular corridor, has that other carpet I was talking about. We are also creating what we're considering to be front doors into these office suites, so there's a pop of color as you get to each door that goes into each department, once again, to help with wayfinding, to say, this is where you're supposed to go. Stop, make a right, stop, turn, go into that location. It's hard to read on this, but this is a paint plan, so it starts showing where we're using accent colors. The walls on the east and the west always are a certain color. The walls on the north and the south, north, south, are also always a color. And then the walls that we don't show any color on, those are the base white. So once again, livening up, giving it a little bit of warmth, but not going without any outlandish or with any outlandish colors. Then once again, you can see here the perimeter or that ring wall. The perimeter of that ring wall is that red. This is the plan of the fourth floor, so the upper rotunda, and just showing some of the level of detail that we're going to put into the floor. There is a seal on that floor up there, and yet again, the color scheme showing where we're adding the accent colors, the ochre color, some deeper, richer greens, and then the accent painting on the rotunda itself. That's what we're doing. So, as I mentioned, boards are all behind me for when you have a moment to come up. They do read much better in person when you can actually touch and see. So, by all means, feel free.
Thank you. Well, it's always a pleasure to have you come and present. You do an excellent job. Thank you for your work. Council member questions? No? Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda are our consent calendar items. Is there any council member wishing to pull an item from consent? Any member of the public wishing to pull? Mr. Bentz.
Item 2.
I'll entertain a motion on remaining consent calendar items.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Clay, seconded by Member Fonzie for items 1, 3, and 4. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. I'll ask staff to do a brief presentation on Consent Calendar Item 2, Annual Review of Investment Policy and Approval of Amendments.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council members. The item you have before you is an annual update to the investment policy. Historically, the annual update is required by state law, and historically, this has been done at a staff level. About a year ago, the Finance Committee and City Council held a spell update. I think there's a couple of grammatical and spelling changes, and that's it. There are no substantive changes being proposed at this time.
Thank you. Any council questions? Seeing none, I'll open up to the public. Any public comment? Welcome.
Yes, my name's David Benz. I live in 3F Meadows. I'd like to direct your attention to page 10. Under item 6, the second sentence says, the fund shall be managed by a registered or exempt investment advisor with not less than 5 years' experience managing money market mutual funds with assets under management in excess of $500 million. And in parentheses, you have $5 million. Need to add two more zeros. On the section 8, investment reporting,
where the city treasurer shall prepare and submit a quarterly investment report to the city council. The report will include the following elements relative to the investments held at quarter end. On item 14, it says gains or losses on the sale of securities not held to maturity. I suggest that you remove the last four words and just leave it at gains or losses on the sale of securities. That requirement would exempt anyone from having to report losses for anything, whether they had a loss or not. So I think you need your certificates of deposits and your passbook savings accounts. And I would like to have you add CDs and passbook savings accounts that currently do not have a minimum equity ratio of 6% and a minimum capitalization of $10 million be highlighted in the report. I can tell you, I know that you have a dozen or more that don't meet that requirement in your existing CD listing. So I think it would be nice to highlight it, that it is beneath your requirement, and that will happen. It's not any staff fault. It will happen. But at least you're being notified that these are going could turn into a problem. And so I think that that would be a nice report, and all you have to do is highlight it in a different color. And then that would make that report much easier to read and understand. And then on page 6, I just would like to request the ability for me to come in and review the information that is required on the existing portfolio. That's the audited financial statements, the proof of National Association of Security Dealers, proof of state registration, completed broker-dealer questionnaire, and certification of having read and understood and agreeing to comply with the city's investment policy. Thank you very much. If there's
Thank
any
you, Mr.
questions,
Benz.
I'll try to answer.
Any other member of the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none, we will close public comment, bring it back, and I'll ask staff to report on that. If there's any modifications you would make to your recommendations or any response.
It's not held to maturity. We actually do report all gains or losses on sale, so getting rid of not on maturity would not change our current procedures. So, again, if that's something the council wishes, getting rid of those words, it doesn't make a change to our procedure either way. We'll continue doing it that way. I believe his last one was to go ahead and highlight those CDs that had fallen below the minimum purchase requirements. I'm not positive how much work that might take and how labor-intensive it is to look up those. Every quarter we do, as you know, have several pages of CDs worth, I mean, probably over 100 or more. So it may be labor-intensive. What I can do is, you know, not recommend a change to this investment policy, but look into that if that's something that the council wishes for that information. Come back to you and say it's this much time and at this cost to do that.
Thank you. Councilmember Clay, question.
So what is the minimum requirement on CDs, the percentage?
I forget them off the top of my head. Mr. Benz knows them better than I. And we do look at that when we purchase the investments to make sure that they do meet that requirement. As he said, over the years, they may fall below that requirement. They're still allowable under the portfolio. It certainly makes sense to continue to hold on to them until either maturity or they're taken over by FDIC so that we get our full principal and interest back.
And but the
No, and the 6% is the equity ratio. How much?
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're still on consent calendar item number 2. Other council member questions? Seeing none, let me bring it back to staff. Would you prefer to bring this back at a future consent calendar item with any recommended corrections and research on that, or is this something you would recommend we go forward with those two corrections you suggested?
I think you can go ahead and recommend adopting the policy as is with those two corrections, and we're good.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion to that effect.
So moved.
So second.
Very good. A motion by Councilwoman Fonzie, a seconded by Councilmember Clay for consent calendar item number 2 with two corrections. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you, staff, and thank you, Mr. Bentz. We'll move on to updates from the city manager.
Mayor and Council, quick tonight, just a couple of updates. I want to remind everybody the public comment period continues on the draft environmental impact report for Walmart until March 18th. And the public may review the draft EIR and submit comments at our website. That's the best easy access. It is in our lobby and in the library. We also, on Colony Square, we're having lots of comments. The theater looks great. Galaxy Theater is almost ready. Actually, I think Councilmember Kelly has toured it way more than I have. He probably could give you the latest on the seat count. And they will be opening their doors to us in March. The grand open movies to be shown are on our visitatascadero.com website or at the slowfilmfest.org website. That's all tonight.
Thank you. We'll move on to community forum. Opportunity for any member of the public to talk on an item not on our agenda. And welcome, Pastor Shively.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Pastor Steve Shively from Refuge Church on Portola. This is my patient daughter, Ella. And here representing the Pastors Association, just want to pray for the meeting tonight. Heavenly Father, we just praise you and thank you that you are good to us. We thank you for all your provisions. We thank you that your mercies are new every morning, God. We just thank you that you are a God who's not partial, who is just ready to receive any who would call on your name. And we just thank you for sending your son Jesus to make that way. God, we pray your blessing on our city. We thank you for our councilmen and women, and we just pray that you'd give them wisdom. We pray that for our staff. And Lord, we just thank you for, again, for blessing us so much. Lord, bless the rest of this meeting tonight, God, and just go before us in all things. We just pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.
Well, Ella, thank you for sharing your dad with us this evening.
She found a Ford up here. I don't
Excellent. Welcome, Miss O'Keefe.
Joan O'Keefe, Councilman and Councilwoman. Thank you, Councilman Clay, for following up at the last meeting and getting an answer for me about the printry. And Councilwoman Fonzumi, no taxes were paid in 07. As you know, properties are auctioned off after 5 years of delinquent taxes, and the 5 years is not far off. The deed restrictions on the property will be a liability for anyone who wants to buy it. Mr. McKinney said a definition of administrative leave could be found in the personnel rules. Marcia followed up on this, and there is no definition of administrative leave in the personnel rules. But on June 9th, 2009, all of you except Councilman Sturtevant signed the resolution that, among other things, gave the city manager 89 hours plus 62 hours of administrative leave in lieu of salary. Why this language and why that much time, I don't know, but I do know that Mr. McKinney always has a reason for what he does. Wikipedia defines ad leave as a temporary leave from a job with pay. The most common examples are in law enforcement. In Mr. McKinney's case, it is without pay. Finally, I never said the notice for strategic planning did not meet legal requirements for notices. What I said is that it was such a short notice that the public could not plan for it. The Atascadero News basically confirmed this. They received the agenda as its Friday edition was being printed, hence no agenda for the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. DeCarli.
Hello. Mayor O'Malley and council members, staff. My name is Ron DeCarli. I'm the executive director of the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, and I also reside in Atascadero at 9270 Branco Road.
I wanted to inform the city of Atascadero that they are requesting to terminate an agreement and terminate that service. There's been some extensive concerns raised by this city that came forward to a letter to the Regional Transit Authority looking at what type of services could occur between the jurisdictions, and in particular, services between RTA running on El Camino Real. I wanted to inform the city that we received a copy of that letter as well, and we're somewhat tracking this issue. But most importantly, that to remind the council and the staff that our agency, working with the cities, had drafted a grant to do a North County Transit study. That grant was awarded to our agency for the amount of $84,000. And it is to look at transit services in the North County. So it's coming at a very good time. We have not yet received final award of the grant, subject to final approval by Caltrans. But we're committed to working as soon as that happens, to work as quickly as we can with the two cities, the county, the Regional Transit Authority, the general public, to try and assess all the different options available for public transit services. And there's a lot. There's a lot of questions. Is it a local community fixed route service on El Camino Real? How does it tie in with Paso Robles? How do you deal with Dial-A-Ride in this jurisdiction? What kind of connection should the regional transit system go? At what routes and at what times? Where should the coordination occur? So it's a lot of these detailed questions that comes up, as well as work with your staff on developing that scope of work, on hiring a consultant, and then working through that program with you to come up with some answers to many of these questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeCarli. Welcome, Mr. Martin.
Good evening. Steve Martin, I just wanted to give you a little update on the Sweetheart Stroll, which occurred last weekend here in Atascadero, and we had beautiful weather. Whoever's responsible for that, thank you. The event was very well received. Main Street actually made some money on it, which is a good deal. But more important than that, we had many people from in town who had never been in the downtown, and people from out of town who had never been to town who attended the event. Part of our activities included going up and down the streets with a video camera and talking to people who had attended the event and asked where they came from and why they were there. And we had very, very positive comments about the community and about the event from local people who had just moved here and said, you know, we moved from the Bay Area, and this is why we moved here. It's so friendly, and we don't know anything about the downtown, and this is how we learn about it, and we really appreciate that. We bumped into some folks that came over here from the Central Valley who had read about the Sweetheart Stroll on our visitor website and had purchased their wine bracelets online and made a weekend of coming to Atascadero. So it was really very positive for everyone. And also, our merchants were very happy. We had solicited input from our various merchants downtown who participated in the event. They indicated strong sales that day. They saw people they had never seen before, and they were very, very pleased with it. So overall, one of our most successful Sweetheart Strolls. You heard mention earlier about the upcoming film festival activities with Galaxy. I wanted to focus a little bit on March, include wine tasting from Frolicking Frog, Hidden Oak, and Larinetta Wineries. We will have hors d'oeuvres provided by our own Fig and Caltera restaurants, entertainment including bluegrass and folk music by Brementown, and the Atascadero Historical Society will have docents there in period clothing to help add to the ambiance of the occasion. This is not an official film festival event, but rather a way that Atascadero supports the film festival, and tickets are on sale at Atascadero Main Street, the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce, and online at visitatascadero.com. They are $25 apiece, and I urge people to get theirs quickly because we think they're going to go fast. Last but not least, March the 11th is our next art and wine tour in downtown Atascadero, 5:30 to 8:30 in the evening. Generally, we have more than a dozen stores that participate with wineries pouring wine tasting and the opportunity to meet our merchants and take a casual stroll through the downtown. No charge for that. We invite everyone to attend. So thank you very much.
Thank you again. Seeing no other folks approach, we'll close the community forum. Bring it back to staff. We have no public hearings, and we do have some manager reports. First item, 2011 Community Development Block Grant Funding Recommendations.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Tonight we will have our second meeting in the, of the required hearings for the Community Development Block Grant Program. Give me a second. As we discussed at our meeting in December, this community development block grants are funded by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and they must meet one of three criteria. They need the grant program. It starts in September of last year. The county publishes a notice of funding opportunity for the CDBG program. There's a series of workshops, which led to your first hearing in December, where you went through the individual applications for grants, selected which ones were going to be funded and what amounts. Tonight, we're not going to be doing that. It's just a second opportunity for the public to comment or the council to comment. But no funding amounts have changed. No overall funding amounts have changed. It's just purely a second opportunity for the public to see the different grant amounts. So tonight, this will be the final funding recommendation by the City Council to the county, and then that will go forward in March and April. The Board of Supervisors for the county will adopt a final consolidated plan. The amounts of the overall project funding, or the CDBG funding, is estimated at $202,000. That's based on 2010 funding levels. The final amount will be set in later in the coming months by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. The final awards will be adjusted proportionally. There has been quite a bit of talk lately with President Obama's addressed potential reductions in CDBG funding. Those amounts have varied anywhere from 25% down to 5 or 10%. In talking with the county CDBG people, they're thinking there's three groups: the public facilities, public services, and then program administration. The public services portion of the amount is limited to a maximum of 15% of the available funds. And the administration is limited to a maximum of 20% of the overall allocation. The rest of the funds available have to be divided amongst the public facilities projects. We continue. These numbers were the numbers that you had approved. Again, there's been no changes. And I think it's just an opportunity for the public to address these funding recommendations. Otherwise, it's we're looking for you to review and adopt or confirm that these are your funding priorities.
Okay, first off, just questions from council members? No questions? Okay, I would like to open it up to the public, and we'll come back for some discussion. Open it up to the public for comment on this item.
Well, good evening, council members and mayor. My name is Tina Salter, and I am on the board of the El Camino Homeless Organization, otherwise known as ECHO. And I just want to thank all of you on behalf of the board for all your hard work in trying to figure out what you're going to do with this limited amount of money. And thank you very much for what you have chosen to propose to grant to ECHO.
To us, we always wish we could do more, and we do appreciate the work that's been done, and thank you for your participation. I'll open it up to comments from council members. Council Member Clay.
You know, we worked long and hard on this, and I think we really did a good job, and I would really caution us to making any kind of changes at all. I think we did a really good job. Let's leave well enough alone.
It's always tough. Councilwoman Fonzie.
I would agree. I think this is a good funding recommendation and would recommend the council go ahead with it.
Thank you. Councilmember Kelly.
Well, I would like to maybe open it up for a discussion. I wasn't here the meeting in December, and I noticed that Mrs. Warren and a good friend of mine, Rick Morrison, is in the crowd from the North County Connection, and I believe they put in a request for some money, and they're not on the list. And I think their program comes under the urgent health and safety threat to the community. Their facility on Atascadero Avenue is their neighbors of mine. They're very good neighbors. And when you find out what they really do, they are really saving a lot of lives in this town. I didn't know Rick was going to be here, but sometimes in life you find people that you admire, sometimes because of material things that they achieve. I admire Rick because he's alive today. I've known him for 30 years, and he's been lower than any of us could ever conceive. And Mrs. Warren there is sitting next to him, and that's probably why he's alive today. North County Connection has taken Rick and saved his life, and there's several other people over there just like that. And I would ask the council to maybe reconsider.
And if a job on staff, we need to sort that out. Councilmember Sturtevant, any comment?
Well, this is a very difficult time in our city and states, federal, everything. There's a lot of people that are hurting, and I wish we could give money to everyone. I mean, making decisions like this, it kind of breaks my heart. There's a lot of good things going on. I am actually comfortable with the decisions we've made here. There's a lot of across the board when it comes to food, when it comes to homes, when it comes to literacy, those kind of things. We're meeting some needs that are very important in this community, and I'm really appreciative of the people that serve, that do that for fellow human beings, because nowadays caring and compassion are kind of on, there's not a lot of it out there. So I really appreciate the organizations that are doing that, and I wish we could do more, but I'm going to have to go with what we've, I'm comfortable with what we have done here, because we're meeting a lot of needs in these areas. Thank you.
Thank you. A motion. Councilwoman Fonzie.
I'll make a motion that the council approve funding recommendations to the 2011 Community Development Block Grant Program.
Second?
Second.
We have a motion by Councilwoman Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Sturtevant.
I would like to abstain from the ECHO portion of it, since I'm on the board of directors. I don't want to have an idea that there's a conflict of interest there.
Yeah, and just for the record, there is no conflict. Is that correct, Mr. City Attorney?
My understanding is it's not a paid position. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. There would not be any conflict for you to vote.
So you're welcome to abstain. If it was a true conflict, you'd have to leave the room, and that's why I assume that provides these services. Next item on the agenda. Our management report number 2, Transit Center Design Update.
Well, again, thank you, Mayor and Council. I'm pleased tonight to bring the current state of the Transit Center design back to you for input by the Council. Tonight's recommendation is just that the council receive for information purposes these drawings that we're presenting and provide any input or additions or modifications to the project. A little bit of background. The Transit Center has been a longstanding goal of the RTA and SLOCOG to develop a centralized location in each community that will help local transit needs, as well as provide a good regional hub for RTA to also service the individual communities. This started back, or the Transit Center was formally started back in 2007 when there was a Transit Center study done. It looked at numerous sites around town and then recommended several sites. That was brought back to the council in 2009. We reviewed those site selection criteria, and the council selected the Capistrano Avenue site. In 2010, moved forward with the project, selected a design consultant, which was the Wallace Group and San Luis Obispo. And approving this site, felt strongly about having the Transit Center in the downtown core. There was also a lot of discussion about facilitating transit users and getting them not only to the downtown core but to the Colony Square Colony Square project and the Galaxy Theaters. Regardless of the turmoil and the changes that are happening, not, I shouldn't say turmoil, but the changes that are going on with our local transit in Paso Robles and Route 9, transit's here to stay. It's going to be served in some capacity, and the need for the transit center will survive this current routing and funding issue that the transit system's dealing with today. And this design that is being prepared fits the needs for Atascadero. It's the right scale. It's not overbuilt. It's convenient to downtown. And it meets several of the criteria that there was a user survey that was done back when the transit center site selection study was being prepared. And this design incorporates many, or if not all, of the issues that were brought up in that questionnaire, providing shade and rain protection, seating, trash collection, access to restrooms, and just general convenience to the downtown. So the design, as we worked through, when we originally back were talking about this last, when we selected this site, we weren't sure if we were going to have or need additional right-of-way from Colony Square, and there was some uncertainty whether we did not want to lose parking spaces in our parking lot adjacent to Capistrano, and that also has been obtained or achieved. We've maximized the on-street parking, working with SLOCOG on the park and ride location. We've changed some striping and added, I think we've added about 24 parking spaces out on Capistrano and Avenue to help support park and ride. And I think also that SLOCOG, I think as this project moves forward, I think we would like to help them make another run at the Bank of America park and ride potential, since there is such a large parking lot there. And hopefully at some point a lease could be worked out there. It's really a side issue. That park and ride lot, could, you know, there's several around town now. It does not have to be here. It might be convenient, but that park and ride is really a separate issue and could be located elsewhere in town. Primary funding for this project will be through the Prop 1B program with SLOCOG, and Ron DeCarli is here tonight and may be able to talk about what the latest is, as this project will not move forward until that funding is secured. And as we know, any kind of funding programs with the state of California are a challenge these days. And lastly, as far as the design of the project, which we'll go through some of the pictures and the drawings, really wanted to minimize ongoing maintenance. We know our budget is challenged. We're trying to make things. The transit center, here's the large oak tree that is out in the parking lot. Capistrano is along the bottom of this drawing. City Hall building is here. And then the Lewis Avenue Bridge is up here in this corner of the drawing. So the transit center is basically from the tree back. There's three parking stalls for buses from that tree back towards the driveway into the City Hall parking lot. Probably a little better visual as to what this concept looks like is here is a rendering prepared by the landscape architect that shows the two structures. Those were basically the same structure that was developed during a streetscape 2 project. So there's two shade structures proposed. Those would be made up of large, thick, tapered columns, stucco-covered, tile roofs, and then rain gutters was also something that the council expressed an interest in, and the rider survey. Along the back, you'll see there's a stucco masonry wall along that backside. There is a portion of this site that will require up to about a 42-inch high retaining wall to make up that difference between the grade of Capistrano and the grade of the parking lot. The retaining wall is needed to minimize the loss of parking stalls. The flatscape. We're incorporating some of the decorative elements of the downtown streetscape project, the paver bank incorporated into the site. And then there is a paved, or actually a paver pathway that would lead down from the transit center site, and this would be ADA compliant, no more than a 5% grade, so it doesn't require handrails and some other expensive things. So this is just a paver pathway that would lead down underneath that oak tree down to the level of the city hall. This is another view. This would be kind of from the intersection of Lewis and Capistrano, looking back up at the transit center site. You can see some of the angled bus parking areas along this curb. This would all be new curb that would be pushed back to allow space for the parking. So you can see there's not a lot of grading required for this, and then you can see the shade structures back here, kind of in and amongst these trees. I think before I forget, some of the other elements in this, go back to this slide. The structures include solar lighting is being proposed to help minimize on electric costs. These decorative plinths are kind of an architectural feature. Those would also be stucco with like a stone cap on top of them to help kind of give the tie into some of the architectural elements with the Colony Square. As we talked, there's also 13 decorative street lights proposed in the project. They would be not only here along the transit street lamps down towards Stadium Park to help brighten that up at night. Let's see if I forgot anything here. It's minimal landscaping. There will be landscaping along this path between this site and the Colony Square property. It'll be mainly shrubs. We're not proposing any lawn or turf in this area, even though it's shown green in this rendering. This would just be mulched underneath the oak tree in accordance with the recommendation from the arborist. Primary component of this project would be we do need to overlay Capistrano. It's pretty well weathered and broken up. There's some paving alligator cracking out there. The additional load of bus traffic through here would warrant an overlay of Capistrano. So that is also included in the project budget. What this project does not include, here's another view. What this project does not include a separate restroom facility. Right now, we're not incorporating drinking fountains, and there is no particular off-street parking. There's no allowance or not. We're not figuring that any of the City Hall parking lot would be allowed for long-term or park-and-ride parking. Here's some of the project cost right now. Surveying and engineering, about 90,000 city staff time. Environmental soils test is roughly 30,000. The actual construction of the transit center sites, we try not to use that. And this, I don't see a lot of surprises in this project, but we are allowing in the overall funding a contingency of 137,000. Our goal would not to use that, but that brings a total, kind of a worst case project cost of $825,000. Schedule for the project, and again, this is all dependent on what happens with state funding, and as there, that is the funding source for this project. We're working on construction drawings, permits could be processed and probably completed by May. Securing funding and bidding, best case, might happen in June. It would be back to you to award bids in July, and would best case starting construction in August and finishing probably in December. So the alternatives tonight would be approve this concept as presented, Two would be to direct staff to reconsider certain elements, make additions or deletions, modify the scope or revise the schedule, or direct staff to just terminate the project. And with that, I know it was kind of a lengthy discussion, covered a lot of ground there, but I'm here to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you. First, I'll entertain questions from council members. Councilmember Clay.
Thank you. In regards to the grant, I think Mr. DeCarli said something about it hadn't been approved yet. Is that right?
Yeah, because it's on the west side of right. Capistrano, they would probably come down El Camino to West Mall or East Mall and then to Lewis Avenue and then into the site across the bridge and into the site.
Right. And then the seating areas, is there three benches or?
We're showing four.
Four, okay. Well, that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine. And for the public out there, it really sets between the potential new library and City Hall, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. And
when you're out there on the site, a visual is from the oak tree back to the driveway into the City Hall parking lot.
Okay. So. And then the other question on the architecture, what kind of funding do we use for that, for all this drawings and all this stuff?
That would be part of, I think right now the city is fronting that effort, but the funding would come out of the 1B funds.
Okay, when it's funded. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilwoman Fonzie.
Russ, a question regarding the current drop-off point that is across the street. It's going from the other direction. I guess it would be going towards the northwest or northeast. Is that going to go away and they will just be on the other side of the street?
Yes, that current RTA stop has been considered to be somewhat temporary, so that would go away.
Very good. And will there be a drop-off area for people bringing their parents or their children or spouses, whatever, to drop them off? In other words, are you going to stripe the curb so there's a place to pull over and let out those who need to get on the bus or pick them up?
I think this area beyond the bus.
I'd like to see something that shows a spot for people to do that. I think there will be those that are coming in to look at movies or go to the library, go other places, and it's very important to have a very clearly marked drop-off area and pickup area. And then whether that's near the bottom or the top, I would leave that to you, but to find a spot that would be logical and easily accessible.
Sure.
The question about congestion on Capistrano, do you see this increasing the congestion for the cars coming after school and to the library or to City Hall? You see some impacts that may result from putting in this transit center?
Well, with the bus stop that is there on the other side of the street and just moving that traffic basically to the other side, I don't see that being an increase. There could be slight, increases in the amount of traffic there.
Okay, I think one of the ways that we might want to mitigate that is the Bank of America Park and Ride, and I'd like to see that pursued concurrently with this project if we possibly could. I think that's a worthy goal. I sat and watched them get off the bus there across the street. Some of them came down and got into the parking lot in front of City Hall, for instance. There's a need for parking in that area, and we need to address that. And just for the general public, I was out and about and asked a few people what they had heard about the transit center, and they said, "What's a transit center?" And so I'd just like to clarify for the public, if you could, Russ, this is a bus stop, correct?
It really is. That's transit centers. The one in Paso Robles has the train function and perhaps taxi service, but this is solely for fixed route bus service.
Thank you.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes, when I first looked at this, I have a 90-degree turn in there at the end. Otherwise, I can see some conflict of skateboarders going into that driveway area that'll probably be quite congested when Colony Square gets bailed out or even as it is right now. So that would just be a suggestion to kind of slow skateboard traffic down.
Sure. We shared that concern, and that was probably the main reason that we proposed making that out of pavers, try to rough it up a little bit, and it would make it a little less inviting to
skateboard. Bob, you got to stay off that skateboard, okay?
Way back.
Yeah, Russ, the design of the low maintenance, or you know, the low, you know, with the solar lights and just you know, the mulch and all that. Just, you know, excellent idea. Just, you know, that way we can have something and we're not paying extra money to take care of it, except for, you know, paint or upkeep, that kind of thing. So from that perspective, I like it, and I like the walkway to the city hall and all that. But the one thing that concerns me is just that, you know, I drop my daughter off at school there at the junior high, and then I'll drive, you know, in the afternoon, I'll pick her up, I'll stop there at the stop sign at Capistrano, and as soon as you go around that corner, there's those parking spots that are already delineated right there, which I think are a little further up than where this is going to be. And it just, sometimes it comes up a little close on the bumper. You know, just there's not a lot of room right there, especially when you're in the bend of the road. So I was just kind of looking at the drawing here and looking at that and thinking about the buses pulling out into traffic, which is in that bend. I know that there's, you know, it said in the report the distance was not an issue, but, you know, you are making, you are pulling left hand into the traffic here, and you're actually in the bend of the curve. So I'm sure you've thought of that. What are your thoughts on that?
We had the, with that being a concern, is the stop sign there at Lewis and Capistrano. So traffic coming this way is going fairly slow. His suggestion was that we incorporate at each of these bus loop or bus parking stalls a pavement loop detector, and that when the bus begins to pull out, it would trigger, just like a traffic signal, it would then trigger a lighted caution sign back towards the intersection that would alert drivers that a bus is beginning to pull out. Quite frankly, we don't expect three buses to be here at the same time, even though there's three sites. So more than likely, this site, this southernmost bus parking stall is going to be the one that's utilized, and that will give, you know, the greatest amount of time and separation between traffic at the intersection and cars moving to the south.
Is that a consideration we've thought of, that the what he mentioned about the light and about, you know, because the crosswalks, you know, that's very helpful, the crosswalks on the El Camino. So, you know, I like that idea.
It's not an in-pavement lighting system like the crosswalks, but it would be a yellow sign with a LED lighting in it that would alert a driver to the bus movement.
Well, I would like to see that included as well.
Sure. And we planned on it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Clay.
You mentioned there wouldn't be any drinking fountains. So I was thinking those skateboarders, they need water, you know that. But the other thing is, you know, I'd really caution you on removing parking spots. If I'm not mistaken, those spots are worth about $30,000.
We will open it up to the public. And again, it's been an honor to serve on Council of Governments last few years and as past president. But projects like this are actually make it fun. We've gotten to fund a number of things like the Free 101 overpass. Many of our projects, like Sunken Gardens, got some help on. And now this transit center. And we owe a lot of thanks to Ron DeCarli, who's the executive director with San Luis Council of Governments and has helped us find these opportunities. So are we going to be able to keep this opportunity?
We're going to be able to keep this opportunity. We're going to build this project.
Good.
That's how I see it. I wanted to, one, compliment staff, compliment the city for moving forward with this project. I think your staff's done a very good job at summarizing the issues and the project and kind of the history of how it's come to play. And our agency is strongly advocating and supporting transit centers and downtown cores. We've built them in San Luis Obispo and Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande. The biggest one probably is a transit center would be the Paso Robles Transit Center associated with the train station. And we found there was one really missing here. The North County Transit Study that was done 4 or 5 years ago identified that as a shortcoming and a recommendation. And we've been working with the staff to come up with a study and design the project. You've selected this site, and I think this is an excellent site for the project as well. We also wanted to at least clarify, you know, in terms of the overall design, I think we're very supportive of the design. We've encouraged your staff to go above and beyond, to do something that really fits your community, to fit your downtown. It's part of your downtown. Make it a part of the streetscape. And we reserved $300,000 a year and a half ago towards a project. We didn't know at that time if we were going to have a project, but we wanted to let the city know that we were committed. We have, I see the funding source on this is Proposition 1B. Our agency is looking at programming that money in April, and hopefully at April at the very earliest, subject to state budget. The money has been approved. It's a matter of being when it might be released, but my staff is optimistic that this project funding is going to occur relatively soon. We also concur with the budget that you've established. I think that seems to be a reasonable budget. We would suggest in terms of your contingency that you may want to concurrently think of an add-on that you could put on with the project, such as advanced crosswalks that you have on El Camino Real, because this is an area where you might have a lot of people going back and forth, and having that type of flashing light might be very helpful. Of extending any pedestrian-related improvements and or street trees on Capistrano. Typically, the Federal Transit Administration encourages transit-related improvements within a quarter mile, an eighth of a mile. A quarter mile starts getting a little bit fuzzy. So you may want to have your staff look peripheral edges around here to determine the need to look at ADA ramps or sidewalk extensions or street trees, for instance, down Capistrano towards the Rite Aid, towards that section of kind of completing that whole as a corridor. And we're supportive of that. We would increase right at the tangent of that curb relative to site distance. And your engineers indicated they looked at it, it met the standards. RTA staff had some concern just because of the tangent of the curve. So you may want to have your consultant work with RTA staff specifically. Their initial suggestions was to see if they could move it south 50 feet, 60 feet, just to get a little more distance from that curve. And perhaps, you know, the suggestions that they came up with, flashing lights would be helpful too. But just reviewing that with RTA, I think, might be helpful. The other issue, in looking at the site design, it was a little hard to determine whether making certain that there's some integration of schedules that meets ADA requirements. And typically, those are large. Those could be, you know, 3 feet by 3 feet. Of a size where the visually impaired can see schedules and signs, and to be able to make certain it gets integrated into the design somehow. And kind of the last issue on the shelters themselves, they're visually pleasing. You may want to just check to see how functional they are relative to shade. They appear to be maybe 6 feet or so. Maybe they could be redesigned somewhat to provide some additional shelter from rain and or primarily shade, I would think. So you might just scan the size and see if that could be modified. I think overall it's a very good project. We're very supportive of the project. We're real pleased to see you move forward on the project. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Any council member questions?
Thank you.
You covered it. And I do think we do want to address all of those good suggestions. Did you have a comment?
After Mrs. O'Keefe, could I ask a question?
Yeah, if you want to do that now or?
If I could, yeah. I was just wondering, I think we've put up all numerous new bus stop stations in town, and I believe there's one right across the street from this location. Was there any consideration to follow through on that theme with these three or four stations that you have there?
The new black metal bus stops that went in were ERA funded. Those were really replacement, you know, units for the existing ones we had. This site, we felt more strongly about trying to tie it architecturally to Colony Square, you know, and try to play off some of the colors and themes and the tile roof, those kind of things, and make it a little more substantial since this is more of a hub and not just an ordinary bus stop along El Camino. We want to make it a little more enhanced.
Thank you. Well, we are actually going to open it to public comment. Now, that was an extension of our staff report being a representative of SLOCOG, but welcome, Ms. O'Keefe.
Sorry, I didn't realize that format was.
You're
Joan
fine.
O'Keefe and... I just want to follow up with what Mr. DeCarli said. I do occasionally ride the bus, And I can tell you that most of those shelters are not deep enough to protect people from the elements, and especially, you know, the direction of the prevailing rains and things like that. For example, at the government center in San Luis Obispo, they're really not deep enough to afford.
Questions? Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Bianca Koenig. I'm the landscape architect on this project with Wallace Group. Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. Russ did a great job. Just wanted to reiterate, we were working very much within the constraints of the project. The oak, we definitely wanted to look at protecting, and also it was also important to tie into the character of Atascadero, hence the enhanced bus shelters and plinth features. Just to address some of the comments this evening, skateboarding. I did send the 3D model down to my 20-year-old brother who's been filming skaters for the last 8 years, and I had him give me a consultation, and he said, as long as that wall is a waist height or higher and with all the shelters, the benches, the kiosks in the way, he said, I don't know any skater who would want to go venture out on that project. Also, in regards to shade, we can definitely look at those shelters again for shade. In summertime, the existing oak tree would definitely help there because it is on the southwest side of the project. But as in regards to rain and wind, we can work with Russ and see how we can address this existing proposal. Also, schedules, there is a kiosk in the image, if you can see it between the trash shelter and the trash enclosure and the bus shelter, there is a kiosk where we can post schedules and definitely take into consideration.
So that pathway, I understood, was going to be pavers.
Yes, and these pavers, they are part of the Atascadero City Standard, and they are also, we work with the companies on a regular basis. They are meant to meet ADA accessibility requirements, absolutely.
Thank you. And while you're here, any other council member questions for our landscape architect? Thank you. Thanks. Welcome back, Mr. DeCarli.
There was just one additional point that I think is important to raise, and that was an issue that Councilmember Fonsi raised relative to the park and ride lot. That was something that we've recognized some time back of the need for park and ride lots. The impact of any kind of a transit center relative to parking of the downtown, we've already experienced that when you were at the old downtown and parking. So we know that's going to be an issue. We're real pleased with what the city came up with was, you know, extending a park and ride lots by restriping. But we would like to be able to work with the city on working with Bank of America on working a long-term lease arrangement. We've accomplished the same thing at St. William's Church, and it's a very, very successful park and ride lot. That parking lot at B of A is extensive. You could take the entire back bay and probably put in 25 spaces or 45 on the entire back point. And it could be a revenue source for them, too. As we're doing long-term leases with St. William's, this is an ideal one as some kind of a joint public-private partnership. And we'd really appreciate any assistance you can help provide that we'll try and help work with your staff to make that happen. Thank you.
Thank you. And, of course, all good suggestions. And having been someone who has actually gone to both of those organizations to keep working on that, though it would be a good opportunity for our community, and they are a community partner. But thank you for your work on that. I trust staff will incorporate all of these suggestions, though brought up individually and by the public. I think these, everything mentioned tonight, are things that we are all interested in. So I think we have a little bit of time to keep working on that. We certainly don't want to delay the project either. Any other comments?
I'm ready to make a motion.
Okay, let me make sure we have no other comments or questions. Okay. Go ahead, Councilman.
Okay, Council received for informational purposes the conceptual drawing and provide any input as to additions or modifications to the design, and that staff be directed to take all the comments today and from Mr. DeCarli, Council, the public, and the ones that incorporate the ones that fit to make this a better project.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion by Councilmember Clay, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Kelly. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Last agenda item, number 3, resolution in opposition to the governor's proposal to abolish redevelopment agencies in California. Well, this is a no-brainer. Staff report, please.
Yes, Mayor and Council. This is an item that's particular concerning to our redevelopment agency, and of course, the city of Atascadero. We've been very successful in building our downtown and stimulating the local economy using redevelopment. Governor Brown has made.
Thank you. I think I can dispense with council questions and move to public comment. Welcome, Mr. Bentz.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is David Bentz. I live in 3F Meadows. I think this is a wonderful resolution. It needs to be passed and needs to be approved. But I would like to also give you a little history. Back in 1968, late 60s and early 70s, the state created a redevelopment agency in every city in the state of California. And they said in order to activate them, the city council, that was going to be the city council's job to activate those. So I'm standing here telling you, I went through Proposition 13, and we thought that we could fight the state. But what the state created, the state can take away. And when I looked at your last financial statement, June 30th, 2010, the redevelopment agency received tax increment, including the supplemental role, of $3,177,654. It also received interest income of $197,982. I'm standing here today telling you that the state is going to try to take as much of that $3,375,636 a year from you as they can. So, instead, create the redevelopment agencies. It's right in the front of the health and safety code section, starting with 33,000. So, I just stand here and give you the best advice that I can think to give you is to don't be lazy. Take every matter seriously and fight as much as you can fight to save the money that redevelopment agencies can raise for a community. They aren't taxing anyone any more money than what any other person in the city is doing. They are just getting the increase in assessed valuation, 100% of it. Minus the 20% for housing set aside, which if they take this, you aren't going to be able to do much good with CDBG funds. So my advice to you is to get ready for a big fight and to fight as hard as you can. And by the way, how the state knows how much money you have? This city and every city, 482 cities in the state of California, have to give a state controller's report every year to the state controller's office.
Thank you, Mr.
Bentz. That's how the state legislature knows exactly how much money you have.
Thank you, Mr. Bentz. I don't know if we want to have Rochelle. This is basically things that we have gone over and done. We may respond in a moment. We'll complete public comment first. Welcome, Ms. O'Keefe.
I am the no-brainer and a minority report.
Well, welcome.
I'm supporting Governor Brown's proposal to abolish redevelopment agencies in California. For too long, redevelopment avoided the scrutiny it needed. The agency is resounding dire straits. More recently, I've questioned why the money is being spent at the Lake Park, the redevelopment area, and Zacoubaril. By calling this area blighted and saying it's near the redevelopment area, the city has justified the use of redevelopment funds. Specifically, I question the rationalizations to fund the Great Lawn, the zoo improvements, including the zoo wall, Alvord Baseball Park, and maybe I've missed a few. These improvements will not result in increased property taxes, as the city doesn't pay property taxes. There will be minuscule multiplier effect, although many of you will insist it is significant. The great lawn increases Atascadero's water bill. Drought-tolerant plants would have set a better example. Thank goodness that the water company did not give the city a break for all the green turf it's watering. Yes, the zoo and war memorial draw visitors from out of town, but the park is 2 miles from downtown. Most people aren't going to drive that far. I also question the recently approved loan program for restaurants in the redevelopment area. Restaurants usually fail because the food is mediocre or they are undercapitalized. The revolving loan fund, which tied up CDBG funds for 3 years, was a dismal failure. In my opinion, the property taxes now taken by redevelopment are needed by the schools, social service programs, the trial courts, etc. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Keefe. You are correct. We disagree with some of your analysis, but I think we've reviewed that a number of times. I don't know if staff would like to comment on any of those items, as we've had devoted several council meetings to those very topics.
Mayor's proposal to abolish redevelopment agencies in California.
My second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Kelly, seconded by Councilmember Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We move on to council announcements and reports, and I'll start with my left, work my way this way.
I just have been appointed to the CAPSLO board in San Luis Obispo, and just to bring to the attention of people that are watching tonight, the Head Start program, which has been in operation now for almost 50 years, is in jeopardy of losing a substantial amount of funding. So there's a lot of families, a lot of poor families that they require that the child care helps them to not only take care of their children and raise them to be good, productive members of our society, but gives the mom and dads a chance to be able to work. And so we're looking at families losing jobs, children losing education. It's not good. So I urge you to write a letter to your congressmen, McCarthy, Boxer, and Feinstein, and just to let them know that you do not want funding for Head Start to be taken away or to be reduced. Thank you.
No report. Councilwoman Fonzie.
Yes, I'd like to report on a recent local agency formation commission hearing that considered a preliminary sphere of influence for Atascadero. And as you know, a sphere of influence is where we are projecting to grow and will include Eagle Ranch annexation if it goes through. It's preliminary at this point. We need to wait for them. And moving on, I went to attend a climate action plan meeting that they had at the County Government Center. Very interesting. There will be further discussion regarding climate action, the implementation of various bills that we all know about in the future. And I'm sure staff will keep us surprised. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Clay.
Yes. Hoover's closed after 45 years of restaurant business in our community. Certainly the whole family was our friends. I don't think there's probably anyone in Atascadero that one time or another didn't eat at Hoover's or went there and talked. And so it's a shame that it come to that. And on that note, folks, use them or lose them. We have some great restaurants in our community. And again, if you're out of town for whatever reason, drive on back and please eat in our restaurants. Again, use them or lose them. And it's sad that we're losing the Hoover family.
Yes, thank you. Councilmember Kelly.
Yes, this evening before the city council meeting, we presented a proclamation to Tom Comar, who is putting a program together called the Jim Green Trail Challenge. And it's basically directed towards people that are suffering from diabetes or overweight. They had a preliminary meeting last week, and I can stand to lose a few pounds myself, and I attended the meeting. And I believe a week from Saturday, they're going to meet again and sign people up at the library. And it's a free program. There'll be dietitians there and what have you. And I think it's a great opportunity for some of us who might be overweight or suffer from diabetes.
No buts about it. Enforcement pays off. I'm just going to read the first paragraph of this letter, and our listening public will know why we are very proud of this report. Atascadero Police, in cooperation with the San Luis Obispo County Health Department Tobacco Control Program, conducted a tobacco law enforcement operation on Tuesday, February 15, 2011. The checks determined how easy it is for minors to purchase tobacco at retail stores. A 17-year-old male visited all 25 licensed tobacco retailers. In every store of the teen asked to buy smokeless tobacco and was then asked for ID and turned away. As you know, we were very concerned as a council in looking at some requirements because we were not doing as well on some sting operations and some review, but I know the Chamber of Commerce and many folks in our community work with our local businesses on education, and the health department did, and I think this is the, we want to really commend our business community for taking this serious. Mm-hmm. We appreciate their effort in this area because we really are not a council that wants to add more rules and more things that we've got to try to do. And these are things that they're already laws. We should not be giving tobacco products to youth. And I'm very pleased that folks are following through on this. Councilmember Clark.
Well, Tom, so what you're saying is they visited 25
25 licensed tobacco retailers, right. And they visited every one of them. And zero.
Yeah, okay.
Right. And so that's everyone complied with the law.
Oh, and I think we, Jerry and I think we're probably the stronger ones on there saying that we're going to give the community one more chance. And I think they took our word, you know, at goodwill, and they've done it 100%. I don't think there's too many people that can say they achieved that. And I'd like to thank Steve. I think the police department was pretty instrumental in part of this training, enforcement, threats, or whatever it takes, but whatever we're doing is working.
And I'd just like to say to the retailers, you know, keep up the good work. Don't sell to these kids, period.
Yes, we do appreciate that. We have no further council announcements.
Do we have
We've been kind of lumping those together, but we'll go to that area now.
Okay. I wanted to see if there were other council members that would be interested in receiving some information about the revisions that are proposed for the stormwater management plan by the Regional Water Quality Control Board. We did receive a synopsis. It's actually very, very difficult to read. I sat down and tried to ferret out what they actually had changed and had a hard time with it, but I was wondering if Russ, down the road, not tonight, I don't want to put you on the spot, but could give us just a brief summary what those changes will entail, that if this is involving creek setbacks, for instance. We know this is a hot-button issue with the public, and there may be other things that we need to object to or support.
I think there's support for that. If we could work that in, very complex problem we are faced with.
Thank
other
you.
Announcements by... And no other reports by staff. We will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Another shirty, Tom.
Yeah.